The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Due to the steps we've taken, Omicron has not yet spread as fast as it would have otherwise done, and that's happening in Europe. But it's here now, and it's spreading, and it's going to increase. For unvaccinated, we are looking at a winter of severe illness and death for unvaccinated, for themselves, their families, and the hospitals they'll soon overwhelm. But there's good news. If you're vaccinated, you have your booster shot, you're protected from severe illness and death, period.
This is a man who lies as a matter of routine. He's carrying on this same big lie that they started back in July, that it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Even The Atlantic, I mean, The Atlantic's right up there with The New York Times as far as driving the news cycle for the major media. The Atlantic this week says that Rochelle Walensky, she came out with this pandemic of the unvaccinated, according to The Atlantic, an unfortunate turn of phrase that the president picked up. The fake president, he picked it up and he stays with it. Even when it's been completely disproven. Even when the facts don't bear it out at all. He just continues. Pandemic of the unvaccinated. The Atlantic says, now the flaws in its logic are about to be exposed on what could be a terrifying scale. The Atlantic says, the pandemic of the vaccinated can no longer be denied. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Hard to believe we're at the very last program of this work week, this fast-moving work week, one of the fastest hours of broadcasting, The Trumpet Daily. We certainly are grateful that you're joining our growing audience. You can get to our program at our website, thetrumpet.com. Remember to go to thetrumpet.com/live so that you can get to that video right after the live stream is ended each day. Of course, we post the podcasts a few hours after the fact on the front page of our website as well. We appreciate your feedback as well. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. This Atlantic piece, as I say, the unfortunate turn of phrase, coming up with this pandemic of the unvaccinated. You've got all of these sports leagues with 95 to 97% vaccination rates. And people, the teams are losing half their players. They've been jabbed. They've been double jabbed. They've been triple jabbed. And they're still getting Omicron. Omicron is, well, it's about to spread across the United States. Let me just go back to this Atlantic piece firstly. It says the 60% of Americans who are fully vaccinated could soon find their lives looking very different. It says, for much of the summer and fall, those who had received two Pfizer or Moderna doses or one Johnson & Johnson shot were told that they were essentially bulletproof. That's what we were told by the experts. We're bulletproof, especially if they were young and healthy. But preliminary data, listen to this, preliminary data from South Africa and Europe now suggests that two vaccine doses alone might still allow for frequent breakthrough infections and rapid spread of the disease. So it's not a pandemic of the unvaccinated, is it? Even The Atlantic is admitting this, but not Joe Biden, not the fake president. He continues with this big lie. Every day, it seems. The Atlantic says, whatever the effects on vaccinated Americans, the Omicron fallout is going to be much more severe for everyone else. Well, is that even true? I mean, The Atlantic is still carrying on the narrative that, look, if you got the vaccine, you're still going to get the disease. It's just not going to be quite as bad. You have more protection against severe cases. But yet, let's just look at, if you want to look at states, if you want to look at facts or the science, look at New York. Once again, New York is leading the way in Omicron cases or COVID breakthrough cases. I believe this is from yesterday, 18,276 cases in one day. You see New York leading the way once again, just like they did under Governor Cuomo when he sent all those sick patients into the old folks' homes. And now New York's got, they've got the vaccine mandates. They've got, hey, no jab, no job for so many of the city employees. And keep in mind, it's New York City that's driving these stats in New York, the state. So no jab, no job. Vaccine passports, can't get into the restaurants. They're arresting people. The NYPD is arresting people that won't show their vaccine passport in restaurants. And then you've got all the mask mandates. And then you've got all the restrictions on schools and whatever else. And New York City is leading the way. You'll notice that Florida is nowhere to be seen. Florida, no vaccine mandates, no mask mandates, no nothing. And it's got one of the lowest infection rates in the nation. How do you explain this? How do the experts explain this? Well, how does Joe Biden explain this? He says it's just a pandemic of the unvaccinated. He pretends, and so do most of his handlers. They just pretend that if you're vaccinated, I mean, it's bulletproof. That's what we were told from the beginning. And even The Atlantic now is waking to the fact that, well, that's not true. What we got 5-6 months ago, it's not true. That's been the storyline of this pandemic. It doesn't matter what the facts turn out. Just keep on with the narrative. Here's the fake president from, Comrade de Blasio, the outgoing mayor of New York City. This reporter's asking him, well, what about all the differing standards that you have from one state to the next? It seems like that we need some consistency. Otherwise, people are not going to, you know, accept what one state over here is doing. Listen to this exchange. This is clip 3.
I feel it here in New York City. Yeah. By the way, I'm from Philadelphia, so it's not like I live in a rural area. But I feel it in every block that I walk in New York City. But if I were in the middle part of the country with you, I don't think we'd see masks. I don't think we'd be showing our vax cards anywhere. So I come back to that point where unless everybody's on the same page in the country, we're kind of screwed.
And you know how you get on the same page? People have to lead. So look, I believe with enough leadership, enough mandates, we're going to get ahead. A lot more people vaccinated. The more people vaccinated, the more we actually make the transition to a time when COVID is in the background, not the foreground. And we know these mandates work, and we know people respond. Look, human beings are pretty predictable. If you say your paycheck depends on it, or your ability to enjoy life and go do the things you want to do, people will make the practical decision overwhelmingly, and they'll go get vaccinated. But we aren't pushing hard enough. We got to go farther.
We got to go even farther. We've got to push harder. We know, says Comrade, we know the mandates work. His city's got the most infections in the nation. So how are the mandates working? How are we all going to have unity from one state to the next? Well, the way to do this is to lead. And of course, he's the leader. He's the communist leader, leading the way for all the other states, leading the way for Florida. I think Governor DeSantis might have something to say about that. No, we have no mandates, and infection rates are plummeting. That's the outgoing mayor of New York City. He's carrying on with the narrative. No matter the facts, Omicron is coming, and we've got to push even harder. I mentioned the Atlantic piece about the pandemic of the unvaccinated, the unfortunate turn of phrase. Here's a piece in the New York Times on the Omicron variant or the G variant. It says, if that continues to be true, it will mean that Omicron, like earlier variants, presents only a very small risk of serious illness to most vaccinated people. It says it's the kind of risk that people accept every day without really reordering their lives. Not so different from the chances of hospitalization or death from the flu or a car crash. So the Times doesn't seem too worried about it. So many people have been vaccinated. And look, we've been saying it's bulletproof, so we've got to stick to that. And yet you've got Fauci. Fauci's out there just today saying that, yeah, our hospitals are going to be overwhelmed in just a few weeks. Never mind what's happening in South Africa. Never mind the fact that the doctors down there said, it's just mild. Don't worry about it. I can't believe the world's reaction to this. Listen to the fake president earlier this week. Again, all things vaccination and booster. Clip two.
I got enough vaccine for the entire country and part of the rest of the world. And it's not that we don't, and it's free. You can just go right now. You can go to your local drugstore, walk in and get a shot. And by the way, if you haven't gotten your booster yet, get the booster.
It's free. We've got some for everyone. We've got some for the rest of the world, as long as they're prosperous nations that can give protection to Moderna and Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. Oh, actually, Johnson & Johnson, they're out of the equation now. I'll get to that in just a moment. All the poor countries, we can't go into those countries. Well, we might be held liable for all of the side effects. And do you hear about all these massive outbreaks in the poorer countries that have like a 5 to 6% jab percentage? Of course you don't. You just hear about New York City leading the way. You hear about the United Kingdom leading the way. All these places that have been jabbed 60, 70, 75% of the population. The jabs aren't working. The jabs are hurting people. You know, a few months ago, we talked about science, what Paul said in 1 Timothy 6 in verse 20 and 21. Science, falsely so-called, he said, they had their agenda-driven scientists, falsely so-called, back in the first century as well. And in that article we wrote over the summer, about all the experts. I mean, the experts, they're just getting it flat out wrong. But, you know, there was a pretty big story in the Washington Post this week about how more and more the Biden administration and even the CDC, all these agencies that are just concerned about your health, right? They're not even going to the panel of experts like they used to. They're just dismissing the panel of experts and carrying on with vaccine of the pandemic of the unvaccinated. This is, again, the Washington Post. Pretty significant article here. What am I quoting from? The Atlantic? Here's the Washington Post. It says here, Biden administration has been sidelining vaccine experts. Well, I thought we're supposed to rely on the experts. Now, even the experts, so many of them, they're being sidelined. Why? Says here, the U.S. government over the past few weeks has made three important decisions on vaccines without consulting independent panels of experts. On November 19, the Food and Drug Administration authorized boosters for all adults, regardless of their job or any underlying health conditions. Doesn't matter what health conditions you might have. Just get the booster. It's one size fits all. Everybody needs to get it. Says here on November 29th, the CDC announced that everyone 18 and above should get a booster shot, a revision of previous guidance that strongly recommended boosters only for those 50 and older. They gave this strong guidance before, and then they come out on November 29th and say, no, we've changed our minds, and we haven't consulted with the panel of experts either. We've just decided something new here, and everybody's supposed to go right along, right? It says then on December 9th, this is just a week ago, the FDA authorized booster shots for 16 and 17-year-olds, moving the age of eligibility down from 18. We got to get it down lower. I mean, really, we got to work our way to five years old. It says, before last month, the standard practice was for the agencies to convene standing outside advisory committees whose members inspect the relevant data, debate it, and vote. So at least you get somewhat of a consensus, right? Not anymore. Now the Biden administration just sidesteps the panel of experts altogether and barrels ahead with its agenda.
Yeah, we've got to get them into 16-year-olds. Based on what? What science? What facts is that based on? The 4 to 5 times the rate of myocarditis in young people if they get the jab? This here says that did not happen in these cases, meaning, let me back up. Before last month, the standard practice was for the agencies to convene standing outside advisory committees. That didn't happen in these cases, meaning that the costs and benefits of these policy moves from a medical perspective were not fully aired publicly and discussed in advance. The public, you see, there's no transparency. The experts are shut out. And then they wonder why people have this vaccine hesitancy. It says here, one of us, these are two people writing this article, and notice who they are. One of us is the former deputy director of the FDA's Office of Vaccine Research and Review, and the other is a former acting chief scientist at the FDA. These are whistleblowers, in other words. And they're coming forward, and they're saying, look, the Biden administration is just sidestepping the experts. Says at this point in the pandemic, the world faces a host of new questions related to vaccines and boosting. The recommendations of experts on the advisory or outside advisory committees are needed more than ever so the scientific community can understand the empirical basis for decisions and so the public can be assured that science, not politics, is driving vaccine policy. See, what happens when you've got a communist, government that just says, hey, we don't need you experts anymore. We know what's best for America. They're motivated purely by politics, by the agenda, by the narrative. Said all this year we've heard, go to the experts, go to the scientists, and now they're not even doing that. It says here, in a news release, the FDA explained that it didn't convene the outside committee because approving boosters for 16 and 17-year-olds does not, quote, raise questions that would benefit from additional discussion by committee members. Well, we don't need any additional discussion. We've just lowered the age from 18 to 16, and we're here to tell you, do as we say. This is will worship on steroids. This is will worship, as described there in Colossians chapter 2. Just do what we tell you to do. Says, but that is unpersuasive, given the previously expressed views of panel members. The CDC has not explained why it did not convene its own panel of vaccine experts for its recent decision. They don't even explain it. They just say, get out of the way and listen to us. Do as we say. My father, remember the piece, a dangerous new age of worshiping the will. That's from May-June of 2020, a little over a year ago. He said, American politics are in a state of hysteria. There's a deadly reason so many people are adopting insane ideas. They're adopting insane ideas. You want to know why the Biden administration is now sidestepping the panel of experts? Because more and more studies are coming in showing just how dangerous these experimental drugs are. This is from the Daily Mail. You're not going to get too much coverage over here. There's a little bit here and there. And in some cases, they're coming from left-wing sources like The Atlantic, like The New York Times, like The Washington Post. Here's the Daily Mail. CDC warns Americans not to get the J&J shot over blood clot risk following 9 deaths. So Johnson & Johnson, that was one of the big three. But not anymore. Why? Blood clot deaths. That's why. It says here, most Americans should be given the Pfizer or Moderna mRNA vaccines instead of the Johnson & Johnson shot that can cause rare but serious blood clots, U.S. health advisors recommended Thursday. Notice this. The strange clotting problem has caused 9 confirmed deaths after J&J vaccinations, while the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines don't come with the risk and also appear to be more effective, advisors for the CDC and prevention say. Well, there's a lot more vaccine-related deaths than just 9. You can be sure of this. If we're to believe the VAERS site, that's at the CDC. In any event, here comes the CDC admitting
Yeah, let's get rid of the J&J jab. It says, it's an unusual move, and the CDC director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, must decide whether to accept the panel's advice. Well, if the recent decisions are any indication, she'll probably just say, listen, we don't need the panel's advice. We're not going to benefit from any further discussion here. Just get the jab. Just get the jab. Will worship. Well, we'll see what she says. But the panel in this case says, yeah, the J&J's dangerous. Too dangerous. It says here, J&J's vaccine initially was welcomed as a single dose option that could be especially important for hard to reach groups like homeless people who might not get the needed second dose of the Pfizer or Moderna options. And of course, read between the lines there and you see that the J&J is not quite as lucrative as the other two. So you wonder if maybe there's some financial, if there's some financial motivations here as to these recommendations. It says the CDC's advisor said Thursday that it was time to recognize a lot has changed since the vaccines began rolling out a year ago. So it's just been a year. We just passed the year anniversary a few days ago. And a lot's changed, says the CDC. And so, yeah, we suggest that we pull this off the market. Notice this story from Reuters. It says, Moderna COVID-19 shot more likely to cause heart inflammation than Pfizer's study, or than Pfizer's, says a study. So on the one hand, you've got the CDC saying, J&J is not so good, go with Pfizer and Moderna. Reuters has this story that says Moderna is more likely to cause inflammation. Go with Pfizer. Are you writing all this down so you can keep track? So you know what to do? So you know when to trust the experts, when not to trust the experts, when to just go with the fake president's statements? It says here, Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine is up to four times more likely to cause inflammation of the heart muscle, a very rare side effect, than its rival vaccine from Pfizer. Yeah, they're all rivals because they're just making in, they're raking in money, billions, tens of billions of dollars as we get the vaccine out. Not one or two, now three and four. And that's the great thing about Moderna and Pfizer. You don't just need one shot like the old J&J. I mean, that's on the shelf now. Forget about J&J. But the others, you've got to get the two and then the booster, maybe a fourth one as well. They're already onto that in Israel and some parts of Europe. So keep getting the jab. And now it just comes down to Pfizer and Moderna. And you can see why their share prices are skyrocketing. What a racket. What a lie. You talk about a big lie. Reuters says, listen to this. This is another Reuters story. So one Reuters piece says, look, Moderna, 3 to 4 times more likely to get some kind of heart inflammation, the blood clotting. You've heard it all, at least if you listen to this program. You get the truth. Then you switch over to this other Reuters story. This headline says, refugees lack COVID shots because drug makers fear lawsuits. Documents show. Why would they fear lawsuits? All of these deals that Pfizer and Moderna are striking with these prosperous, rich Western nations, they don't ship in the drugs unless the governments in those nations say, you're protected. You're protected from any kind of liability in case there's an adverse reaction to your drug. They won't send in the drugs otherwise. They're not confident enough to say, look, whether the country's poor or not, whether the government there has control to indemnify us or not, doesn't matter. We want to save the world. It's not that at all. They want to sell their drugs. And they want to sell their drugs to rich nations, not the poor ones, not the ones where they can't be guaranteed to be protected in case there's an adverse reaction. Reuters says tens of millions of migrants may be denied COVID-19 vaccines from a global program because some major manufacturers are worried about legal risks from harmful side effects. This is Reuters. This is Reuters. Did you get that? There's harmful side effects? You'd never know it if you watched the roundtable at Scarborough's slot in the morning on MSNBC. You'd never know it. You'd never know it if you talk to the talking heads or you listen to them at night on MSNBC or CNN. Harmful side effects? This article continues. The legal concerns are an additional hurdle for public health officials tackling coronavirus, even as officials say unvaccinated people offer an ideal environment for it to mutate into new variants that threaten hard-won immunity around the world. It says many COVID-19 vaccine manufacturers have required that countries indemnify them for any adverse events suffered by individuals as a result of the vaccines. It says where governments are not in control, that's not possible. So they can't get the drug. They've got to get this indemnification first. And then they'll be happy to send in all these drugs that Joe Biden says are free. They're totally free. Are they? Really? These governments are paying billions and billions for all these dosages. And wouldn't you know it, the Pfizer CEO, the CEO over at Moderna say that we just need more and more and more of their product. It never ends. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to send some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. Also, you can call our operators standing by to give you a subscription to the Trumpet magazine. Tomorrow's news today, there's no cost, no obligation. Just call our operators today. That number is 1-866-930-3024. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
If you find yourself living in a place where people are still talking about COVID nonstop 2 years in, it is time to move. Not just because your neighbors have been brainwashed, though obviously they have been, but because your neighbors are boring. At this point, it is simply not an interesting topic for your private life. Yes, COVID has killed a lot of people, so has prostate cancer. Imagine telling people about your prostate every day for the next 2 years. People would know that you are a narcissist. No one would sit next to you at dinner. You would be boorish. And that's exactly what COVID talk sounds to the well-adjusted among us. When we talk about COVID incessantly, we miss everything else. And that's the real point. This is a big and complicated and completely fascinating world. Babies are born, the elderly die, and in between, all kinds of amazing things happen. We succeed, we fail, we scheme, we inspire, we fall in love, we create things that hadn't existed before. We have deep and valuable insights into life itself. Human beings do a remarkable variety of legitimately interesting things. Talking about corona is not one of them. So let's stop.
There's Tucker Carlson from this past week, summing up what so many of us undoubtedly have been thinking for well over a year. Every single day, the talking heads, the ruling class, the elites, nonstop talk about a topic that most people just want to move on from. Here again, The Atlantic magazine, the title here, where I live, no one cares about COVID. They certainly care about it if they're mayors in major cities of the United States. If they're communists in government, they care about it. If they work for MSNBC, they care about it. It's often all that they talk about. But you move to an area where people are just moving on with their lives. The Atlantic says, outside the world inhabited by the professional classes in a handful of major metropolitan areas, many Americans are leading their lives as if COVID is over. The leaders, they scream Omicron, even as the rest in America go back to work. Well, those that aren't terrified, there certainly are two sides. The nation is pretty evenly divided. But most just want to move on. It says here, as Christmas approaches, we can look forward to more of this sort of thing with the meta-ethical speculation advanced to an impossibly baroque stage of development. Is it okay for a two-year-old son to hug grandma? And on it goes. I heard an official the other day. Again, carry on with the vaccine. Make sure you get the vaccine. Still wear the mask if you have a family gathering. And it would be good to have everyone tested the morning of. It's just crazy. Who does this? Those people don't do this. Boris Johnson doesn't do it. He's being exposed every other day as a hypocrite. There was a story out of the UK just today saying that when he announced, going back to the very early stage of the lockdown in May of 2020, he got up and told the UK, the entire nation, hunker down, stay away from people, socially distance, don't go outside. He left that press conference and went to a party with 20 people. He went from the press conference where he tried to scare everyone to death straight to a party of 20 people. So he's feeling the heat. But they're all over the map in the UK. A lot of people are scared. A lot of people are disgusted. A lot of people hate the hypocrisy. A lot of people just want to move on with their lives. It's chaos all over the place. I mean, these standards from one person to the next. You've got one CEO of an airline company saying, yeah, the masks, they pretty much don't work. You've got another CEO of another company saying, if my employees don't get the jab, they're gone. And we're not going to have any religious exemptions. It's like that reporter said to de Blasio, well, I mean, I understand what you're saying for here in New York City, but if you and I went out into the Midwest, nobody'd be wearing masks. People are going to be carrying on with their lives. There are some signs. We don't want to get anyone's hopes up because it's been 2 years of this craziness, 2 years of this propaganda. But Alex Berenson and a few others have come out with some sign. For one, just the fact that a lot of courts are ruling against these mandates. Kids are getting back to school and so on. Companies are quietly coming out and saying, we're not going to have mandates now since the rulings have been struck down in the courts. You're not hearing much about OSHA anymore carrying out this unconstitutional decree coming from the fake president. But still, what bitter affliction we see in our nations. Bitter affliction. That's the way it's described in 2 Kings chapter 14. We've seen a lot of it in these last couple years. Carrying on now with our Bible study, this is, if you want to turn over to 2 Kings, speaking of 2 Kings, we'll go a little bit earlier in the book, 2 Kings chapter 4. This chapter begins by telling the story of a widow, the widow of one of the sons of the prophets, and she came to Elisha to tell him that her husband had gone into debt before he died, and his creditor was about to take her two sons from her to become his servants as payment for the debt. And Elisha, the prophet, told her to give whatever property she had to the creditor, and she had nothing but a pot of fine olive oil. And, of course, that wasn't even close to being able to pay for the debt. And so she had the woman gather, the prophet did, had the woman gather every empty pot and jar that she could find and to pour the oil from her container into all those other containers. And when she had done what the prophet commanded, she found that she was able to fill them all It was similar to the bread and fish miracle in the Gospels. Jesus Christ feeding the multitude when all that they had were a few scraps. A tremendous miracle. Elisha told her to sell the oil and to pay off the debt. So that's in the early part of 2 Kings 4. And then Elisha travels to this town of Shunem, about 25 miles north of Samaria. And we see what happens here next, verse 8. And it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunem, where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as often as he passed by, he turned in there to eat bread. And as she and she rather said to her husband, "Behold, now I perceive that this is a holy man of God, which passes by us continually." So this was a woman unlike the other one that had a little bit of wealth, and she was anxious to contribute to God's work, to please God. And so she and her husband invited Elisha to stay with them in their home whenever he came to Shunem. And he was pleased to take advantage of their willingness to serve God's work, their hospitality. And after a time, the woman suggested to her husband that they add a room to the house even for guests. So Elisha and his servant could stay with them and be comfortable in their home. So Elisha is obviously impressed with this woman's willingness to serve. And so he asked her, "Well, what can we do for you in return?" And she said she didn't need anything. She just wanted to be closer to God. She just wanted to support God's man. She had a wonderful attitude of service. It says here in verse 14, and he said, "What then is to be done for her?" And Gehazi answered, "Verily, she has no child, and her husband is old." And he said, "Call her." And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, "About this season, according to the time of life, you shall embrace a son." And she said, "No, my lord, you are a man of God. Do not lie unto your handmaid." So Elisha informed this woman that you're going to be a mother. And she just couldn't believe it. She just couldn't wrap her mind around that. She couldn't imagine giving birth to a miracle son. And of course, this is no problem for God to do, to perform a miracle such as this. She has the son. And then when the boy was quite young, maybe in his teens, he died. And the woman put him on the bed in Elisha's room. And when Elisha went in there, was told what happened. Notice, this is way down in verse 32, it says, "And when Elisha was come into the house, behold, the child was dead and laid upon his bed, and he went in therefore, and he shut the door upon them twice and prayed unto the Eternal. And he went up and lay upon the child and put his mouth upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes." So he's just right on top of them face to face. "And his hands upon his hands, and he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. And then he returned and walked in the house to and fro, and he went up and he stretched himself upon him, and the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes." So there was now life in the child. I mean, it's just one miracle after another with respect to God's work. That's the way it's always been. These prophets of old, whose hearts, their hearts were in the work. And here was a woman, a servant, whose heart was in the work. And God raising that woman's son to life. Verse 36, it says, "And he called Gehazi," that's the assistant, "and he called and said, 'Call this Shunammite.' So he called her, and when she was come in unto him, he said, 'Take up your son.' And then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out." So she had given to God's work. She had supported God's work. She had served God's work. And of course, you see God here providing for this woman, giving to this woman, blessing this woman. Verse 38, "And Elisha came again into Gilgal, and there was a dearth in the land, and the sons of the prophets were sitting before him. And he said unto his servant, 'Set on the great pot and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets.'" So again, another difficult time, a dearth in the land, drought. In the land, the sons of the prophets were still sitting there before his feet. They wanted to be educated. The college was growing. Verse 39, it says, "And one went out into the field to gather herbs and found a wild vine and gathered thereof wild gourds, his lap full. And he came and shred them into the pot of pottage, for they knew them not. So they poured out for the men to eat. And it came to pass, as they were eating of the pottage, that they cried out and said, 'Oh, you man of God, there's death in the pot.' And they could not eat thereof." It was just so horribly bitter. They couldn't choke it down. Verse 41, "But he said, 'Then bring meal.' And he cast it into the pot and said, 'Pour out for the people, and that they may eat.' And it says, 'There was no harm in the pot.'" So God provided for them. God performed a miracle, and they had a nice meal here. We talked on yesterday's show about the ancient Israelites, the fact that they had to go out each day to gather up the manna. They had to look to God every day for daily bread. And Jesus told us to pray for God to provide our bread spiritually daily, every day. Get into that habit to look to God, to trust God, to rely upon God. In 2 Kings 5, just to continue with some of the high spots here, it says, "So Gehazi followed after Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him, and he said, 'Is all well?' And he said, 'All is well. My master has sent me, saying, Behold, even now, there be come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophets. Give them, I pray you, a talent of silver and two changes of garments.' And Naaman said, 'Be content, take two talents.' And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags and two changes of garments and laid them before two of his servants. And they bare them before him. And when he came to the tower, he took them from their hand and bestowed them in the house. And he let the men go, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master. And Elisha said unto them, 'Whence come thou, Gehazi?' And he said, 'Your servant went nowhere.'" So this assistant ended up lying to this prophet of God. Verse 26, "And he said unto him, 'Went not mine heart with you when the man turned again from his chariot to meet you? Is it a time to receive money and to receive garments and olive yards and vineyards and sheep and oxen and men servants and maid servants? It says, the leprosy therefore of Naaman shall cleave to you and unto your seed forever. And he went out from his presence, a leper as white as snow." So God punished him for his dishonesty. This is a quote from my father's book, The Former Prophets. He says, "It is very serious to work against God's Holy Spirit and his work, whether you're young or old. This was a terrible punishment for Gehazi, but the same will happen to anyone who makes his mistake. You may think you won't get leprosy by doing something along these lines, but consider those who leave the church and don't come back. The tribulation is much worse to experience than leprosy, and they'll know while they are in it that they could have escaped." It says here, "Young people who have been taught by Elijah and who act this way are displaying spiritual leprosy. They will pay a penalty." See, the prophet said, is this a time to receive money, or is this a time to get caught up in physical things? Again, we went through Matthew 6 yesterday. Jesus said, "Don't give thought to tomorrow and the cares and worries and concerns of tomorrow. God will help you through that. But just really focus on how you can serve God today, how you can support God's work today." Notice chapter 8. This is 2 Kings 8 and verse 1. It says, "Then spoke Elisha unto the woman, whose son he had restored to life, saying, 'Arise, and go you and your household, and sojourn wheresoever you can sojourn, for the Eternal has called for a famine, and it shall also come upon the land for 7 years. So this is a little bit later on in the story. And here's God's prophet going out of his way to get in touch with this woman that had been so helpful, that had supported him earlier, that had been so generous with him. Verse 2, and the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines for 7 years. So he comes in and says, look, we're heading into some rough times. Here's what you need to do. And she did it. She didn't answer back. She was like Abraham when God said to Abraham, look, you leave your hometown and all of your family and friends and go to a land that I'll show you. And Abraham just got up and went. He followed God. That's the same attitude and spirit coming from this woman. That's the attitude God's looking for in us. As many as are led by the Spirit, they are the children of God. Romans 8:14. We've got to be led. We've got to be willing to follow God's lead. Verse 3. And it came to pass at the 7 years' end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines, and she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, tell me, I pray you, all the great things that Elisha has done. And it came to pass, as he was telling the king how he had restored a dead body to life, that behold, the woman, whose son he had restored to life, cried to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son, whom Elisha restored to life. It says, and when the king asked the woman, she told him. So the king appointed unto her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers, and all the fruits of the field, since the day that she left the land, even until now. So God took care of this Shunammite woman who had taken care of Elisha, who had taken care of God's prophet. The point of it is here, if you help God's work, if you support God's prophet, if you support God's leadership, if you support his work, God takes note of that. God remembers that. God blesses you for that. And so you can't outgive God. We've often pointed out how that the more you pour your heart into God's work, the more you grow in godly character, the more we become like God. And Acts 20 and verse 35 says it's more blessed to give than to receive. So if we're giving, if we're contributing, if we're supporting God's work, God always gives back, always. We went through the subject of tithing just a few days ago in the doctrines class here. And in Mr. Armstrong's booklet on that subject, he makes this powerful point how that even just the mindset, it's so important the way we view that subject. It's not a matter of, well, all of this is mine, 100% of this is mine, I'll go ahead and give God a tithe. It's the other way around, as Mr. Armstrong explained. God says, all of this is mine. The earth is mine to give. You can work it and shape it and do these things. You can extract these precious metals out of it. But I made it. It all belongs to me. The 100% that you took in, that's all mine. And I'm going to give you 90%. All that I require of you is a simple tithe. God wants to get us into the spirit of giving and serving. He wants us to learn how to give like he gives. We can't possibly outgive God. If we give to God what is commanded, and then some, if we're the living sacrifice that just contributes, and this isn't all just about money, this is about just pouring our hearts into the work, supporting God's work, fervently and faithfully praying to God and praying for his work, and then supporting it in every other way that we can, that we're possibly able to. Everything in this world's about to go up in flames anyway. And our money's about, how much longer is Bidenflation going to be sustainable? Just print off trillions and trillions of dollars and pretend like it's not going to lead to runaway inflation? Herbert Armstrong used to talk about use your money wisely for godly purposes while it still has any kind of value left. That value is disappearing and fast. One final scripture, 1 Timothy 6, or one final passage. Herbert Armstrong, when he was young and first getting into the business world, and he wanted to, you know, be a success and all of those things, this is before his conversion, he wanted to rub shoulders with the most influential leaders of his day, the leaders of business, the leaders in politics and industry and so on. He says here, this is from the autobiography, "In my foolish conceit of those days, I was cocksure that I was headed for outstanding success." And he did have some measure of success physically, but in more than one occasion, God pulled the rug out from underneath him to humble him, to prepare him for conversion to the truth. It says, "The hand of God was taking away every activity on which my heart had been set, the business success before whose shrine I had worshipped. This zeal to become important in the business world had become an idol. God was destroying the idol. God was destroying that idol in Mr. Armstrong's heart and really humbling him, leading him to repentance and change, leading him to living a life in service to Jesus Christ as head of the church." Verse 5 of 1 Timothy 6, it says, "Perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw yourself." See, evil men, they just assume that physical gain must be godly. If you're really accumulating physical things, then you must be important. You must be a man of God. You must be doing things right. You can even come into God's family, God's church, and be selfish with applying God's laws or living by God's laws and say that, well, I'll obey these laws, but there better be a big return. I mean, if God says to tithe, okay, I'll do it, but there better be a lot of blessings that come in right away. God's instilling within us the spirit of give, the way of love, of just wanting to give because that's the way God is. It is the way of blessings, but we can't apply the laws of God selfishly. We just do it because we're commanded to do it, and we do it with a cheerful heart. As Paul said when he wrote to the Corinthian brethren, he talked about the Macedonians and their hearts and how they were just giving cheerfully and so on. Notice what he says here in verse 6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." Godliness, God's character, and also contentment. We need both. We need to be content with what God has given to us. And God will give us all a measure of prosperity. If we're obeying His laws, if we're living this way, if we're obeying His laws of finance, He will bless us. But contentment is all important, that word for contentment in the Greek. It says, "A perfect condition of life in which no aid or support is needed, a sufficiency of the necessaries of life," just being thankful and appreciative for God for the fact that He's provided us with all of our necessities, all the things that we need. Verse 7, it says, "For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain that we can carry nothing out." So don't set your hearts on physical things. Be like that Shunammite woman who just saw a man of God and wanted to contribute to that man's work because she knew it was God's work. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. You can call our operators to become a Trumpet subscriber, 1-866-930-3024. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.